Evening, one and all. Yes, another Tuesday and another guest here with me, Barry, on a book and a chat. Well, here where I am in Connecticut, it's a bit white outside. We had about 3 or 4 inches of snow the weekend. My guest, though, she is further south. Even though I thought she was in Canada, she's actually quite a bit away from Canada. She's in Mexico. So it's a bit of a rush because I was trying to find where she was, but I got hold of her. Now, the thing we do not know a fraction of what goes on in our minds and our bodies, and you know, the intuitive part of it. You know, people think they've lived other lives, people sort of have visions and everything like that, and we do not know. We learn about these things all the time. Well, my guest went through a lot of this, and in fact she's come up with some very interesting other parts in our life to ensure and ease our way through life with alignments with the spirits. But I will find out more. I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Debbie Anderson. Hi, Debbie. How are you doing?
Hi, Barry. I'm doing well. And yes, usually I am in Canada, but I'm wintering further south in Mexico at the moment. Like you, I don't want to be looking out of my window and seeing that cold white wasteland. Oh. So like the birds, I migrate.
Yeah, no, normally people go to Florida. You've gone one step further down to Mexico. So.
Well, let's put it this way. I love, I get to stay in Mazatlan in Mexico. Uh-huh. And it's such a beautiful city with beautiful people and a huge amount of what I call expats here. But it's such a wonderful community and everybody seems to be friendly. And right. that's all I ask for is just, allow me to do my journey, you do your journey, and somehow we our paths cross and we intermingle, and that is just beautiful. Right. I've been coming here for about 4 years now, so I can't say that I don't love it, because otherwise I wouldn't keep returning.
There you go. And to be quite honest, I would prefer to be there than Florida. I found the humidity too much in Florida.
I like 26 to 29 degrees Celsius, because in the States everybody talks in Fahrenheit.
Right.
But I do not appreciate the humidity, and I've visited Florida a couple of times, and anybody that lives, I give my hat goes off to them to live in that almost like soaking wet environment.
Oh, it's horrendous.
So
yeah.
It's not something that I like heat, but what they say is, like with the snow, I like snow, but not a wet snow. I like a dry snow. I like a dry heat. That's what I like.
Yeah, yeah. I love it when it was the other day. Oh, we had. The snow wasn't too bad this time, but we had some very light stuff the other day. And I looked at somebody was sort of out, and I thought, we're doing a snow blower. It's only not much. They were actually using their leaf blower to blow the snow away because it was such a small stride. You know, there's a thinking about.
When people have the invention of going, I have something I can use. Let's get on and do it. Don't break a barrier. Don't create anything that you can't do. And of course, anybody listening in there going, okay, there's two British accents here. One's in Connecticut and one's in going on. I love it.
So. I know, me too. Now, when did you first realise you had some intuitiveness, for want of a better term?
Well, I sometimes say to people, I see dead people. So, you know, I get it out there kind of thing. If people shy away, that's fine, you know, because some people turn themselves to the clairvoyant or a psychic or a spiritual reader or an intuitive or whatever. And I always say all roads lead to Rome at the end of the day.
Yeah.
People have whatever title they like to have it. And I'm assuming because of the British accent, like myself, you probably grew up in the UK, in England.
Yes, indeed.
And of course, my journey started when I was about 4 years of age, and I was seeing spiritual beings, and I call them light beings because there was no shape or form to them. Mm-hmm. There was just this energy that came and sat on the end of my grandmother's bed.
Right.
And of course, being a child of four in an age, I was born in 1957. So there was nothing of this kind of openness or awareness, and certainly no internet in those days, you know, and certainly and nothing that you could find out anything about. So, of course, my mother was not aware of anything like that. So, you know, she would come up, I would scream because, of course, it's like, oh, my gosh, all of a sudden the room's lit up and all these little beings are there and I have no idea. And my brothers are asleep in their room and my mum's downstairs with my grandparents. So what the heck's going on? So, of course, I was, a screen mum came up and she's like, oh, you're just having a bad dream, go back to sleep, child.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
You know, I was brought up in an era where children were seen and not heard. So, yes. This happened a few times, and I think Spirit were going, okay, we're going to have to find an easier way to communicate with this kid, because it's scaring her at the moment, and her mother has no clue of what's going on here. So I then started to have what I term now with people when they talk about their children chattering away to themselves as an imaginary friend. Because,
yep.
Again, my grandparents, my mum was there with myself and my twin brothers, because her marriage was on the rocks, and, you know, she went home to mum and dad, and we were there too, and my grandparents truly didn't like the fact that there would be noisy children around.
Right.
And, of course, as a four-year-old. So I would just sit and chatter and have these conversations and so forth. So that was my sort of beginnings. But as life went on, and what I thought was a natural phenomena, nobody around me understood. You know, I never had those conversations. You know, like every kid, I went out and played, and, you know, we didn't watch TV and stuff like that. So we'd have imaginary, you know, in those days with the cowboys and Indians, or, you know, we'd make camps and things up on the waste ground up at the end of where we lived and stuff.
Exactly,
like that.
Yep.
the imagination was always in that roaring, get out and do it, because there's nothing here to, you know, stimulate your brain. So we may see something on the Saturday morning pictures, and then we would go out and then we would reenact that and play that. And so, to me, doing that and having these imaginary friends were all part of the whole kebang. I didn't think there was anything unusual about me. I never really spoke about it. Mm. And it was just one day coming back home from school. I was in my teenagers, and I was up on the top of the double-decker bus, as you would, coming home from school. We didn't have school buses like they have in North America. So you would just make your own transportation home. And I was coming home, and I saw down below, as I looked down outside, Jesus. I don't know if they believe it was Jesus. Yeah, I know people go, what did he look like? And I said, there was just this beautiful face, just like the ones I'd seen in church when I'd gone every Sunday with my mom and my brothers to church, to Sunday school and things like that. You know, this shining, beautiful, beaming smile coming back at me. And, of course, what do I do, thinking that everybody else can see this, as I shout out on the top level of the double-decker bus, hey, look, there's Jesus. Now, anybody that travels on public transport today will know that when people do that on public transport, regardless of whether it was in the 1960s or the 2020s, you start to back away.
There's a nutter.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a nutter on the bus, and she's just along from me. Yeah. Of course, I sat down feeling rather sort of, you know, because people had that look of horror on their faces, and there were school kids on there and adults and so forth. So I just sat back down, still looking out at what I deemed, and I still to this day say was Jesus, and you know, went home, never said any more. And of course, the next thing, I'm hauled along to a psychiatrist, because obviously somebody on the bus has said something to my mother.
Right.
You know, in those days in England, if you were hearing voices in your head or anything like that, there was one place you went, and that was the nut hell.
You're right.
And you were literally in the asylum there, and you would have had a lovely little white jacket that you would have been given, that you couldn't harm yourself, and probably put it into a padded cell.
Yep.
So, not realizing what was happening to me, but Spirit obviously stepped in and said, oh, hang on a minute, this kid, nobody's really understanding what's happening here. So I was told by Spirit, you're going to have to say, take it on the chin, kid. Say you made it all up.
Right.
And I'm like, what? So I did, and I really got into absolute car. My mum said I was a teenage girl that was just trying to create attention and stuff like that. And
right.
It didn't go down well. All these encounters thus far were not really creating the best outcome as far as that. But as I went on in my years, and I played with a tarot deck, and, you know, I did it secretly, I suppose, and people would come to me, and I would pull the deck out, and I would do a reading for them and things like that. And so it sort of transpired, and then I got to the point where I met up with other people after going on a workshop to learn how to read the tarot properly. And I got to go on, meet some wonderful people there that I realized were all the same abilities as me. They saw things. They didn't just learn how to read the tarot.
They could see other things as well,
absolutely. So we formed then, and again, this was in the early 90s, 70. So you're talking about the fact that, again, no internet, nothing like this was really in awareness, especially in the UK. So we formed what would be deemed nowadays as a spiritual development group, and we went along and somebody would read a book or somebody would find out about something and then we would all learn from it. And that was when I was introduced to the Arthur Findlay College. And, of course, it was then known as, I think, the Arthur Findlay College of Metaphysics or something like that in Stansted in Essex. So I saved up all my pennies and went along and did healing and mediumship. And in those days, the one medium that really sticks out in my mind is Gordon Higginson, and he's passed the spirit. But he was an amazing, not only spiritual medium, but a physical medium as well. And what that means is he could actually manifest something into the room.
Wow.
So
okay.
That is not done very much, and I didn't get to experience it, but I've heard from people because it's a very closed thing. And I think it still does go on behind closed doors in and around the world, but with something like that, if you go back to Victorian times when mediums would stand on a stage and sometimes there would be extraplasmic fibers that would appear and the person would see. I think a couple of times people actually, mediums died because somebody rushed forward after seeing their loved one projected there in this misty kind of being. And, of course, then the being went straight back into inside of the medium. And,
right.
Of course, so that was stopped. And, of course, I don't think physical mediumship now is as openly done because of those kind of things.
But, yeah.
And I think in a lot of that, that's like it's all shut down and not really talked about. So that was sort of my journey, and, I suppose the rest is history. I got told at that time I'd be doing platform mediumship and later on in life, and, of course, as a young 20-year-old, I'm going, well, why have I got to wait so long? But I didn't realize it wasn't a punishment. It was a case of my life.
Right.
And all those things that came in there, I had a son and a family and then, life going on around me. So I wouldn't have had the time to put all that interaction as I did later on. So it all made sense, of course, later on. But at the time, I'm thinking, oh, that's great. I've got to wait till my 50s. I'll be an old lady. I'll probably be in a wheelchair.
That's funny because
kind of semaphrane.
They say
wheeling me around.
They say that. The fact you were four when it started, and they say that children and elderly people are more susceptible and open, shall I say, to this sort of thing. But in your case, you didn't close it up. You knew it was there. You kept it going, which I think was very interesting.
Yeah, I suppose I kept it going behind closed doors kind of thing.
Yeah.
It seemed that after that, spirit only sort of opened it up when, there was one point that at that time when I was working in corporate world in the UK that, somebody found out I did this and then somebody else found out. And although I didn't do it at work, they went and told my boss and I almost lost my job.
Wow.
So sometimes it was a case of you had to keep things quiet. I'm not doing it at work. It's nothing to do with work. It's not interfering with my work. And up till this point, nobody knew about it. And I've been working here for quite a few years. There are people in our world that just, even today, are not open to it. But thankfully, we live in an enlightened society that we can't just fire people, can people, just because of their spiritual beliefs or what they do, without due cause kind of thing. It was definitely a different way of growing up. But I think for me, because I didn't have many friends, my mom moved around quite a bit when I was younger, so there was no real, lifelong friend that I had as a child growing up. So I think this was my way of creating my own little world for myself and not needing anybody. So I suppose you could say I was a bit of a loner growing up because of that factor.
Well, you had loads of other friends, but nobody could see them.
Nobody I had to buy birthday cards or gifts for.
Just imagine
that. Saving alone there is zillions per year.
It's funny how it happens. I remember I was driving along the Icknield Way one time near on going to Aylesbury. So I've been mm-hmm. vegan, that sort of way. Yeah. And I was on my scooter, I think. Yeah, I was on my scooter. I was going up to meet somebody in Aylesbury. I'd come from Barnet, so I was going up there. And when you go past something and you think, did I just see that?
Anyway, yeah, exactly.
I went past. But I went past and I sort of pulled up and looked around and there was this Roman legion disappearing into the, you know, just fading away in the background. And anyway, I got to Aylesbury and I met the person I was due to meet, and we met in the pub, and I said, African says, "You okay?" I said, "Oh, a bit of a shock." I said, "I just seen this Roman legion." He says, "Oh, them, we see them all the time."
A matter of fact,
you know.
Yeah, well, I think of Aylesbury, they're people go, "Oh, well, there's so many castles and things." I said, "There's so much history there that you can't really walk a stone's throw from anywhere."
That's what
and
I
not
said,
come
yeah.
across something. And that was, I've had people that, have talk about these, "I'm going to see the fairy ring at this particular place." I said, "There's fairy rings everywhere. There really are. You could walk into any forest or any wood
totally.
And there would be a fairy ring." I can remember one at the end of my grandmother's garden. We would go up sticking, as my grandmother would call it. She would drag her. We would all go out as kids. I think it was also a way of keeping us occupied and out of the house.
Right.
And she would drag a Hessian-type sack. We'd all drag it along, and then we put all these little sticks and things for lighting the fire.
Right,
pieces of wood that she could use on the stove or in the fireplace.
And that's right. Yeah.
There were many magical places that we would find that I'm sure were only manifested for us. And I know as an adult, I actually went back to the area, and although my grandparents had passed on and the house was no longer owned by anybody, I went to areas that I had been to as a child and tried to find those places again to take my son to show him.
Right.
And I could not find them. And, I even described this place to somebody. And she's looking at me, because, you start off with that, "Have you lived here all your life?" kind of thing. And, when they say yes, and then you start to open that conversation. And I was talking about this place that actually was a bit like the Secret Garden in the book, The Secret Garden. And there was a slight wall there. So it obviously was a house that had been in ruins.
Yep.
But you went through this door, and when you were in there was this very lush garden.
Yep.
But it wasn't as, pretty and as well kept as the one in the book, The Secret Garden.
No, but they're all, you come across them. Yes. You do.
Of course, and I can remember, because once we would get up there, my grandmother and my mother would sit down and they would get the flask out and they'd have a cup of tea, and of course us kids would go roaring off, burn off all the energy we could before we went back and just do our own thing. And of course it was thankfully in a time where, my mum wasn't concerned where we were. I think it was more of a case of, "Oh my God, peace and quiet for a few minutes, just leave them. And I can sit here and just have a cup of tea with my mum," kind of thing. So we had... so much fun. So, and, I've been to places around the world where I've walked through what we call vortexes, or, there are different levels. And you were saying about the Roman legion there. And, I think it was Albert Einstein that says past, present and future all going on at the same time.
Of course, it's all time.
With that perspective there, there is only time that is man-made by us, a 24/7, 300 whatever days a year that's fed into action. But there are all these portals or vortexes that take us across. And, some people experience that during meditation or in those trance-like states. And I was very blessed to go to Arizona some many years ago, to Sedona, and I've been told my husband and friends have been told about this beautiful portals that were out by the airport of all places, but it was above the airport there, which was a tiny little airport at the time. And of course, in my eagerness to get out of the car, because the two travelers that we were with were in a bickering stage, and I'm like, I'm done. Never travel with people you don't truly know.
Right.
And it was a case of that. I was fine one-on-one with them, but the two of them together just bickered amongst themselves. So anyway, I wandered off on my own. As soon as the car came to a portal halt, I'm out the door, shot off down the pathway, and I went around the corner, and I'm sitting there and in a meditative state, knowing that they saw where I had gone, mm-hmm. and I could still see them, so assumed that they could see me. Mm-hmm. So I sat for a little while looking over this vista and going, oh, this is really beautiful, and et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, they're taking a long time to catch up with me. I suppose I should look back and see where they're at or whether they've gone in another direction. Maybe they and my husband are also feeling we need time on our own. So I looked back and I could still see the three of them standing by the car. And, of course, I'm standing there waving my arms as you do, flailing around there, thinking, I'm very visible here. They must see me. And at that point, I'm going, they can't see me. So I walked back quite a bit, and I was almost upon them. And they're like, where the heck have you, where did you go?
Yeah.
I said, oh, come on, you must have seen me around here. So then, of course, I started to share about this lovely vista I had found and so forth. Well, of course, when we walked back, it wasn't there. I could see roadways and cars and vehicles. I couldn't see all the beautiful landscape that I could see. So I'm going, obviously, I'd stepped in my, I've got to get away from this into this portal to see what it was I saw. And it was just a beautiful, and of course, they couldn't experience it. So I felt bad for them, but I'm going, maybe that was just at that moment, that little pathway was open, like your Roman soldier was there. At that moment, he was passing through, and anybody that's read Dinah Gabaldon's Outlander, or I think it's the Outlander series, probably will, you know, relate to that, and any of those other ones where they've gone from one lifetime to another. So, I find it very fascinating when we go to different places, some of the things that happen. So
one of the things you have done to help people is create this vibrational energy deck.
Yes, that's correct. The vibrational energy oracle deck is the first deck out of four decks that I've created, and the whole concept of the deck was to create something very simple. And anybody out there listening in that's used oracle decks will know that there's many hundreds, if not thousands of different oracle decks and tarot decks available on the market. So Spirit was saying that they wanted one which just basically was simple, you know, the KISS principle.
Yep.
Keep it simple sometimes, you know, because otherwise a lot of them came too much information and so forth. So that was how I created it. And I've never created an oracle deck at that time before. And, of course, I was, you know, bringing mention, I started writing the Oracle deck in about 2012. And at that time, I said, well, you know, you should go and see Doreen Virtue. She's created all these Oracle decks. She probably knows exactly what to do with it. And I got told, you're going to do it and just get on with it. And, of course, as it turned out, anybody that follows Doreen Virtue, she, a few years ago, made this complete transition from where she was in her spiritual journey into Christianity, and basically gave up everything that she had done. And well, sadly, you know, I'm all for anybody changing their journey, and that's what life is about. It we're all on this journey. There's no destination till we go home to spirit. Yeah, yeah. But sadly, at that time, she just took it into a different vortex and basically told anybody that was playing with oracle decks or tarot decks that they were it was all evil and they shouldn't be doing it. So I understood later why they didn't go to her, but at the time, as a novice, if you like, I used them, but certainly wouldn't have known how to create it. And in my to-do list or bucket list of life, it certainly was not there as number one, create and publish your own oracle deck. It certainly was not. So it came out of, as I always say, left field when spirit do this kind of thing. So, you know, I'm like, okay, step up to the plate and do it. You know, you're going to get the guidance and the information. So the deck was very simple. The images have a lot of sacred geometry, a lot of feeling within the cards, because I was blessed to connect with a beautiful artist. Like the work, the words, the direction, I always say are mine, but I always should say, and co-written by Spirit, because, you know, without them, it wouldn't have happened. You
exactly,
know, like,
exactly. You're sharing.
Exactly.
That's it.
So this beautiful deck was created, and it sells worldwide now, and I feel very blessed that it does. And the whole ease of when I get people to learn how to use it is tapping into their own intuition. Mm. So they're opening their heart, shutting off their ego,
yeah,
and connecting. So I always say to anybody when, and this is applies to any oracle deck or any tarot deck, if you like, you know, think about the question or the direction you need help with, and then just shuffle the deck. But think about that. Like, take a few breaths. I always say to people, you don't just decide, okay, I'm going to the shops now to buy my groceries without creating a list. Mm-hmm. So we have to put some thought into it, some intention. And then otherwise, we're, you know, for anybody listening, I don't like grocery shopping. It's
right.
A task that I have to achieve, okay? I need food in my belly, so I have to go grocery shopping. So for me, I create a list, and that may take over a couple of days. Oh, I need butter, I need this, I need yeah. that. And then I go on my journey to the grocery store and then plan out where I'm going. And that's exactly the same with when you're asking for direction using any form of divination tool, such as an oracle deck or a tarot deck. You know, think about it. Take some breaths, I always say.
Yeah.
Take a moment to focus on what direction you're wanting. That's as easy as it is because you're stepping into that intention. And, of course, the question might be complex. It might be simple. And it might be what I always say, you know, go to A, if that doesn't work, then I need to go to B and C. You know those little things
right.
that says, if yes, it's this direction, and if no, it's this direction, and then has, and I always think that's life. So the next thing I say to people is there's no set rules of engagement. Connect to the deck, shuffle the cards, move them around, get a feel of them, touch the cards, you know. And whether you're a poker player or a card player of old or new, everybody knows how to shuffle a deck.
Right. Well,
and
I'm going
to... Just throw them on the table and move them around.
Move them around. Well, I'd love to carry on chatting this, but it's so fascinating. It's sort of... called. I'd love to. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. What I'm going to now is actually hand this show over to you so you can tell people where they can find out more about you and of course, about your vibrational energy.
Okay, yes. Well, the best thing is to go to my website, which is vibrational-energy.com. When you land on that page, it shows you where I am on social media and how to connect with me there, how to download a free version of the Vibrational Energy Oracle deck, as well as the children's deck. Connect with me on Facebook through my development group. Listen to my weekly reading on YouTube. All of it is there on that landing page of my website. So it's vibrational-energy.com. And I always put a www in front of people that you don't need to do that. That's old school. So vibrational-energy.com. Look up Debbie A. Anderson and you'll find me.
It's fascinating. I'm just looking at the page now. It's fascinating. And it's been fascinating chatting to you. As I say, I could be chatting to you for another hour, I'm sure, if we could.
Well,
but unfortunately, that's the time. Indeed so. Well, Debbie, thank you so much. It's, as I say, it's been really interesting chatting to you. And I hope you enjoy yourself down in Mexico.
Absolutely.
Thank
Adios.
You. Adios. Well, there you go. My guest today, Debbie A. Anderson. And as she said, you can find her on vibrational-energy.com. And I'm there looking at the website. Great stuff. Lots of sort of things to see and look and try and the products and the cards. And it's fantastic. It's a beautiful site. And the cards, the designs on the cards and everything. Very good. And as she said, just open yourself up and let the cards fall as they may and see what you get. Now that's it. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh guest, but until always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.